This episode of The Legal Geeks is brought to you by Unlock Stories. You find a phone on a counter, or left on a city bus, or abandoned in a gutter. What do? Try to find the owner, sell it online, see if it holds any secrets. The last thing you should do is launch a strange app. These are Unlock Stories, where a mysterious phone is found and lost and found again, gravitating from person to person, tempting them, compelling them, and changing their lives forever. The stories turn from suspenseful to absurd, heartfelt to noir, horrifying to redemptive. Once you find the phone, you never know what you will unlock. My story is The Veil, about an app that allows you to exchange text messages with the dead. I had a ton of fun writing this because I was able to honor my hometown of Sunnyvale, California, explore legal issues of what would you do if you could find out there is life beyond death and how that could change the legal system, and a lot of fun nerding out at an obscure science fiction convention. Unlock Stories is available on Amazon paperback, Kindle, and Apple Books. Visit unlockstories.com for more and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at GrayStarPhone. Hello, everyone. Joshua Gilliland here, one of the founding attorneys of The Legal Geeks. We are here to discuss Into the Unknown, the first episode of Season 2 of Star Wars Resistance. And with me tonight is our good friend Thomas Harper. How are you, sir?
I'm reporting for duty. You warned me that I would be declared AWOL if I didn't show up for this podcast. So I'm not going to pull a Tam and run off to the First Order.
Good. And joining us for the first time on a podcast is Gabby Martin, who is attorney in Connecticut. Just wrote her first blog post on a Clone Wars arc. And Gabby, how are you tonight?
I am awesome. I am happy to be amongst lawyers who appreciate Star Wars and all things nerd as much as I do.
That was an excellent post, by the way. And if you haven't read Gabby's post, not only is it very well written and insightful, but it's a deep cut to episodes that don't get talked about nearly enough. Rush Clovis doesn't get nearly the coverage I think he should.
Yeah, and before we jump into Resistance, I'll just highlight, we're doing a deep dive on Clone Wars since Disney Plus is coming back. Gabby, do you want to give us a quick rundown on your post that you did?
It was all about the Clone Wars, which I had actually never seen before. So that was my first dive into the Clone Wars and the overlap with the rules of evidence. So for me, it was great to see that the Darth Sidious could have been totally undermined by somebody that just had a little bit of knowledge of the rules of evidence, you know. Bail Organa was coming in the clutch there with some, you know, authentication rules, but nobody really followed up with that. So just knowing that somebody could have come in and said, hey, I know my federal rules of evidence. I know how to defeat Darth Sidious and his evil plans is kind of comforting. I mean, I could have done it. I could have defeated the Darth Sidious. So that's pretty awesome.
You know, you can't spell force without F-R-E.
That is true. I love that. I love that.
Yeah, the watching the Clone Wars is kind of painful because there are a lot of near misses in saving the day, that especially the arc with Fives and season, what was it, six, the last season, that yeah, it just hurts. And we'll get into more of a few more episodes as time progresses. But right now, Resistance is back. We're only getting a short amount of time with Resistance, just two seasons. So we'll see what happens after this when Rise of Skywalker comes out, if we ever get to see these characters again. But let's kind of walk down the issues, and we'll do it, as they, you know, come up in the story. But Thomas, you know, being Major Tom and you know, a JAG officer, we have Captain Phasma outright threatened to execute people for failing to capture the Colossus. Want to talk about summary executions in the military? Because that just seems bad for morale.
You know, I will give Captain Phasma now that she, now that I'm superior in rank to her, which feels really good to say. credit for being nothing if not efficient, despite lowering the shields to Starkiller base and being the reason they lost their super weapon. I will say, before I dive into that, this episode is available on YouTube on the Star Wars Kids channel in full, no commercials. They're doing it, I presume, to get the word out about the new season. So if you don't have cable or you don't have a cable package with Disney in it, you can watch this one for free. But back to Captain Phasma. Credit and points for efficiency and getting her point clearly across to Commander Pyre and Agent Tierney. I'll set aside the rank structure issue, why a captain is giving an order to a commander, but they've got their ranks about as sorted out as the Rebel Alliance does. But it's a problem, right? It's I don't think anybody that knows Captain Phasma's character even a little bit can say that it was anything but a very serious and very thinly veiled threat. She'd carry through with it in a heartbeat. And for these two officers, that potentially implicates Phasma in a couple crimes under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. The first would be basically an abuse of power, right? So the UCMJ is very keen to certain military-specific crimes, and one of those is abuse of subordinates, right? So there's a concept that just because you have rank on someone or authority with position doesn't mean that you should get to abuse them or treat them however you'd like. And here I think very clearly Pyre and Tierney, whatever their mistakes were in letting the Colossus go, they shouldn't have to deal with a superior officer threatening to kill them over the whole thing. And quite frankly, the due process concern is a major one, right? I think addressed this. You wrote a blog post, Josh, about this in The Last Jedi. This is not the only time that Captain Phasma has like threatened and intended to carry through a summary execution. The military is all about efficiency and getting a goal accomplished, but in the criminal system, in the military justice system, there is a very hearty set of due process rights, probably a set of due process rights that exceed what the average civilian gets in criminal court.
Yeah. Gabby, would you like to add anything? Just does this seem like a healthy work environment to you?
Not at all. I mean, every time you see the resistance for that, or the First Order, for that reason alone, just the fact that it's a toxic work environment and you can't even do your job without somebody coming down on you and saying, hey, if you don't do X, or if you did X wrong, I'm going to come and kill you. I mean, they have major grounds to bring employment discrimination, lawsuits. So that would be I would pay to watch that series of courtrooms in Star Wars of all these First Order employees being very disgruntled and very upset with their work environment.
Yeah, and they really double down on it. At Galaxy's Edge, they do a live show where, Kylo Ren arrives and force chokes, like the public affairs officer that is, introducing him. And it's like, it wasn't his fault. Why is everyone so abused? And it's top down where, from the top with Snoke, force lightning Kylo Ren to everyone underneath Kylo Ren getting smacked around as well. That's just a horrible way to live.
Yeah.
And it's not a real good way to run a military either, because unlike the average line stormtrooper that's presumably just a kid that's been indoctrinated and raised and trained since birth, Commander Pyre and Agent Tierney are more professional officers, right? These are folks that were plucked from somewhere. They haven't spent their entire lives with the First Order. The First Order has trained or invested time and money, presumably, in training these folks. And it's taken time for them to get to where they are and integrated into the system. acting like this towards them not only undermines their effectiveness, but if you go in and just like chop their heads off the moment they make a mistake, it creates a real manpower problem that's difficult to solve.
Yeah, there's no performance improvement plan. It's beheaded and you're done. That's,
yeah. Ooh. It kind of reminds me of that part in the skit that Adam Driver did on SNL as Kylo Ren, where he sent the guy a condolence card saying, sorry for killing your family. which that is probably as close as we're going to get to a real life workforce reality show of the First Order.
And then he promotes him and then he kills him.
Yeah.
Full cycle.
I do want to highlight with Adam Driver, he's probably the one of, well, there's probably like four of the current actors I would love to hang out or like barbecue with. He's at the top of the list. Boyega's a close second.
Yeah. So. I feel like you would, if you had Adam Driver over, you would have this really, you know how it's just like the cliche that all the guys stand around the grill and just give commentary like sports style over how you're grilling, when to flip and that stuff. You'd have like a really intense, like life changing deep conversation with Adam Driver. And it would involve only what's on that grill. Like somehow he would find a way.
Yeah. He's really neat. So, which is why it's fun having a villain that messed up and cruel. Cause he can do it. Now, going back to Resistance, let's talk about the Colossus, because I was watching this thinking, like, is it a city-state now? Is it a cruise ship? What's everyone's legal status? Because this is, it was like a marketplace for people. Mm-hmm. And now it's a spaceship. So people who are like leasing space, are they citizens? Like, what are they? So, Gabby, if you want to take a stab at this first, you know, would you think the Colossus is a common carrier?
I would say it gets pretty close. I mean, especially maybe not to the you know, the Resistance fighters on board necessarily. You know, the people in the observation deck and manning the controls, but definitely for all those people in the bar. And because that seemed very, very cruise ship to me. That seemed way too cruise ship, of things going wrong in the ship and these people just drinking and having a good time and not kind of concerned about any sort of zero gravity or anything going wrong. So yeah, they definitely owe, especially when they started moving, as opposed to being a solid vessel, I think they definitely became kind of in that common carrier territory.
Well, just think about, like, 1 minute you're serving galactic cheesesteaks on the deck there, and then the next minute the platform is sinking, and then all of a sudden it turns into a spaceship, and at no point were these guys and girls given the chance to, like, I don't know, get off and leave.
Like mild false imprisonment charges? Possible kidnapping?
It was that or like get blown up by the First Order. So they were in a fight for their lives. So it's kind of, it gets murky fast, because watching this, it's like, all right, no one wanted to get blown up by the First Order. So I get what they had to do, but are they going to give them a chance to like, hey, anyone want to bail out? This is the time. Mm-hmm. Or my apartment's here and now I'm in this quasi Navy. Like what just happened here? But let's talk about, you know, the people getting injured, because we, you know, there's battle damage. We have systems not working, you know,
bar fights breaking out.
Yeah. And people floating in the bar and then like, you know, gravity going crazy. You know, do we have any negligence issues where people can sue for damages? And then the issue of like, who do you sue? Because is it the Colossus's fault globally, mm-hmm. or is it Aunt Z's fault for opening under those circumstances? And Thomas, do you want to take a swing first?
Yeah, I was actually thinking a lot about this as I was watching the episode, and a thought occurred to me that while some folks know that Kaz is not affiliated with the first or the New Republic Navy anymore, technically there could be a strand of liability there, in that the only reason that this chain of events lit off, and I'm kind of boxing the First Order out intentionally because I don't know what the crew would have done had Kaz not shown up and been on his spying mission. But let's presume that they wouldn't have launched into space and gone to hyperspace without Kaz being there and setting all this in motion. Technically, the New Republic military is an arm of the New Republic government, an entity with understandably deep pockets. Not that everybody knows that it got destroyed there at the end of season one. But if I'm a passenger there and I'm looking for somebody to sue with some deep pockets, and I find out that a New Republic military officer was sort of the catalyst of this conflict, I might try to at least sue them and let the New Republic figure out a way to get out of the lawsuit. The reality of and the practicality of that is, you know, another question, because I don't know that there's much of any New Republic government to sue at the start of season two, but they don't know that.
They don't know that. And it raised something I thought about last night was, did the New Republic have a continuity of government plan of, like, you know, we have a plan in the United States for line of succession. If we have the sum of all fears type, well, a Tom Clancy type attack during the State of Union address, and we lose everyone but the Secretary of Agriculture. Like, what do we do? Did they have something similar? Like, were there senators off world? Were all of the resources taken out? You know, so they could at least have some put the government back together again, because the New Republic was more than just Hosnian Prime, was a system of worlds. And yeah, they got a decapitation strike, but does that mean that there was no like backup succession plan on any of the other planets for you know, continuity of government? I don't know. And I don't know if anyone in Story Group has thought that far ahead, but because how many lawyers do they hang out with who think about these things?
But I mean, just for narrative purposes, that would be really stupid for them to have seen two cycles of governments fall through and then be like, you know what would be a great idea? Let's put our entire government on one planet that can be blown up with a weapon. We've seen blown up planets before. That's a great plan. So if they did that, shame on them. Like, shame on them for having a really dumb government in the first
place. I'm picturing this like chart of succession, and after Hosnian Prime, they're all getting together and they're going down, down, down the list. Down, no, he's gone, gone, she's gone. Okay, it's the undersecretary of the assistant to this small moon's education sanitation department. You're now the chancellor of the New Republic. Congratulations.
Or if everyone in the executive branch, you know, even again, their entire structure is a little unknown, and maybe going through bloodline would give a more form to it. You know, message to Claudia Gray: how does this work? But being able to say, like, hey, if there was a surviving senator or senators, you know, does one of them automatically, you know, get the post? Because if everyone in the executive branch is gone, someone from the legislative branch would then, you know, move up, kind of like our, you know, the Speaker of the House or the President Pro Tem of the Senate. Like, they would then, you know, get the keys.
It's possible. I mean, you don't even in our system, you don't have. Forget having everybody in one room or in one building. You don't necessarily have every lawmaker clustered in DC all at once. I mean, presumably, just like real life lawmakers, these New Republic senators have home offices and whatnot. They've got reasons to go back and forth from their constituent worlds. And so it's entirely conceivable that a good chunk of these senators weren't there. So for my injured Colossus passenger, I say, oh no, don't worry about Hosnian Prime being blown up. We're going to find somebody with some authority and we're going to sue what's left of the New Republic.
Yeah.
And Thomas, do you remember, since you're the trivia champion, do you remember how many planets were in the New Republic?
No, and I don't know that they ever, if they put an exact number on it, I don't know. And it was, but the structure of it was fluid, right? The New Republic did not want to be this entity with hard and fast requirements for membership. And so systems were allowed to sort of come and go as they pleased and not have to worry about the iron fist of a central government coming after them.
Interesting. Yeah, there's a lot there. A great, great story could be senators being hunted by the First Order. Comic or, you know, that could be a story or two. But again, we're just lawyers. We we don't write this stuff.
Yeah.
We'd
probably do a much better job at sometimes of the writing structure. We'd be overly critical of the writing structure.
Yes, and that's when the editors would come in and go like, okay, does it all have to be in here? Do we need the flip?
To be fair, two of my favorite Star Wars authors are Claudia Gray and Charles Soule are attorneys by trade, or at least in a past life. So there's always hope for one of us or two of us.
Yes, and Claudia Gray's pretty awesome. So having done a panel with her, she rocks. So let's talk about the employees on the Colossus. So we have the shell people. I can't quite pronounce their name, and you know, like they retract into their shells. We have people who are getting hurt. You know, let's take a look at the workers' comp issues that could be coming up from the loss of gravity. And Gabby, would you like to take the first shot at this?
So yeah, they would definitely have. Hopefully, again, it would go back to what kind of structure this ended up being. If it started. You know, full disclosure, this is my first episode of Star Wars Resistance, so I didn't see what happened in the season finale. But if it started off as like an apartment complex, you know, let's say commercial residential space, then it would depend on who has the workers' comp insurance. What kind of workers' comp system do they have? And then it would be a matter of, again, who do you sue for these injuries? And you know, what kinds of claims can you bring? And I was one of the things I was thinking, you know, with my ADA hat on, was with the Chelidae.
Yeah, that's right.
Was that they definitely may have some sort of ADA claim of not getting reasonable accommodation if somebody tries to screw with them. You know, because this seems to be something they do when danger's around, they are known to react in the way they do. So this seems maybe some sort of genetic physical impairment that they have. And, you know, if they were forced to work or, you know, forced to go back to work or, you know, he's being knocked on to kind of go to work, they would definitely may have some sort of claim of not being reasonably accommodated. That would also be a defense for them if, you know, it was argued that they didn't work.
That sounds like an outstanding blog post and an ADA analysis of the Chelidae.
Yeah.
That is like, that's what the Legal Geeks is all about in my mind is that sort of organically comes up. So workers' comp from my perspective, it's a very state dependent area of the law. Mm-hmm. So the basic concept of workers' comp is you get hurt on the job for one reason or another, you can't work because of that injury. Who pays you? Is the employer on the hook? Is it your fault because you were at fault for your injury? You know, and to that point, who pays your medical bills as well? Mm-hmm. And in Pennsylvania, I can't speak for other states, but Pennsylvania has it's called a no-fault system. So the state does not look to who caused the injury. So if it's your fault, you fell down the stairs, you were say on a break on the Colossus while there was zero G and you were being a little reckless and hurt yourself. Law doesn't care. If you were injured in the scope, course and scope of your employment, there will be some measure of coverage from a workers' comp standpoint. To your point, Gabby and Josh, the question is going to be, who do you come after for this? Traditionally, in a state like Pennsylvania, employers are mandated to have workers' comp insurance. And because we have no clue what the Colossus is in terms of how it's structured, are these folks independent contractors who would otherwise, like an Uber driver, they're not actual employees, so they wouldn't fall under that insurance umbrella. I find it hard to believe that the Colossus would have responsibility for every little vendor and whatnot. But a good example that I think might qualify is OPPIT, the little janitor that runs around with his little goggles and he's constantly losing his equipment and getting stepped on and stuff. I think his janitorial services are central to the Colossus's function. And if there's ever a character on that vessel that would be an employee, it's that little guy.
For sure.
And so I think if poor little OP Pit fell and like broke off one of his little robot arms or got hurt and he couldn't operate his little like galactic floor buffer, I think he would have good cause to come to Captain Doza and say, hey, I'm reporting my injury. I was buffing the, you know, below deck and got hurt because of this crazy gravity problem. Somebody's got to pay my medical bills and I should get some amount of lost wages. So I have advocated before, if you don't know me, I like stand by OP Pit. If there's one character in the Star Wars universe that I would represent in a heartbeat, it's that little janitor.
He definitely has a claim. And I think he would have a claim against maybe against Kaz for just like totally bumping into him and not having any control of, he seems to be the only one who has no control of this zero gravity situation.
I think like negligent infliction of emotional distress.
Definitely, for sure.
Now the idea of going to Doza, this, the beginning had probably the most profound Doza moments that we've seen of him so far. You know, because he was an Imperial, and he talks about not, you know, like having lived through this once before, didn't think it would happen again, that the universe hasn't learned from history, and, you know, like there was no time to, like, you know debate about, like, who knew what when, let's, you know, get to work and deal with the situation. I really liked that from his character development, because he's mostly been silent. With some exceptions, but it was almost kind of a Miyagi-like wisdom moment where he just spouted off, some pearls of advice to Kaz right at the beginning. And I thought that was very interesting to see, will we get more of that this season?
Yeah, and Gabby, that's like, it makes me excited for you to go back and watch season one, because Josh is right, we really don't get much. But the way that Kaz in particular figures out just a little peek into his background is like a really cool scene. I won't spoil it, but it's kind of one of those like little moments that will send like chills down your spine.
Yeah.
It's good. It's very, also, very good.
Just from being like a first time watcher and seeing kind of representation in the Star Wars universe of minorities is great. Like, I heard him speaking and I was like, I recognize that accent. That is my family's accent. So, you know, being a minority and hearing that and seeing that in the, I mean, you have, you know, Oscar Isaac, Diego Luna, like having that more representation in the Star Wars universe is just amazing to me. So I'm sold. Like, that sold me, even if I wasn't sold before.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been acquiring some Star Wars jackets, and the first that I got for myself was a Cassian Andor. So, and I'm very excited for that series, because a good spy story is always fun. So, very, and I really, talk about a guy who just loves Star Wars and like just, I hope I get to touch Jabba the Hutt. It's like, dude.
Yeah.
Love it.
that kind of, and seeing, and I think what's cool about that is you see that Star Wars is this kind of global phenomenon. You know, it's not just an us thing. It's a uniting, globalizing thing. And it's great. It's something we all grew up with. So
yeah.
I love it. I love Diego Luna.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's for everybody.
When I think in particular in this show, it really is great because the narrative is that this is this outpost, this like derelict almost outpost on the fringes of the galaxy. This is like a motley crew of folks that have just come together to live, right? They're not on any kind of spy mission outside of Kaz and whatnot. These are folks at the beginning of last season that are just making their way in the galaxy. And, you know, this seems like complete common sense, but when you conceptualize that, you're like, you would see everybody. It would be like the cantina, except on a much grander scale.
Yep.
And, but you don't always see that put into practice in movies. Or even Star Wars has been guilty of it sometimes, where they'll slap an alien suit or in a moment where they could have somebody that, you know, a minority character or whatever, it's supplanted with an alien. And so having those folk, or I guess those backgrounds there, it just makes it feel that much realer. And I think the entire first season is great because of that. And they're already off on the right foot this season.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about Tam, because I had a couple issues with her conduct. And
putting it mildly.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so you guys who are all wearing, and you know, neo-imperial uniforms just blew up a planet with what, 6 billion people? Mm-hmm. And she's cool with it? Like, she's not at all concerned about this. This would be like, hey, we blew up France, all of it. Who's in? You know, like, there's no like remorse, there's no shock. She's not even phased. But she does like the idea of like, hey, you're trying to bring order to the universe, and I like that, and can I fly something?
Was she aware of Hosnian Prime? Do we know that for sure?
No, that's a good question.
Kaz was the only one, I think, that saw the recording. And I realize we're like somewhat spoiling things for Gabby, but
yeah, but it was a broadcast. Did she was with Tyranny? Did she? That's something worth looking back on if she knew about Hosnian Prime.
I don't think she did. I think Tyranny was very much still in the phase of grooming her and presenting the First Order as something honorable, something that it wasn't. Because it's one thing to sort of cast the Resistance as, you know, a bunch of malcontents and pirates. It's another thing to say that about the New Republic, which is a system she grew up in. So I could be wrong, but I think it was a private broadcast that the Stormtroopers were watching. But still, it's clear that they're doing some messed up stuff on the Colossus last season that she directly witnesses, and yet there she is. give her a TIE fighter, or a TIE helmet, and she's ready to rock.
Yeah, it's like people disappearing. If anyone saw the screaming Huck speech and went like, yeah, I am on board.
Yeah.
Red flag. Red flag.
Again, and you have to know that other people are getting threatened, like, in her vicinity. And she's seeing people, like, if you don't do X, you're gonna die. What about that is enticing to you? This is not a circus. This is not, like, just running off and, like, saying, okay, screw my friends. Like, I'm gonna go join these people that are threatening to kill people.
And that's one of the most... That's one of the most visceral moments last season. And I think her character and her arc has been my absolute favorite. I know we're diving down just a little bit, but you know, the emotional tug of war that they set up between the hopes and dreams that she had pinned joining this fireball crew and wanting to become a pilot and all the promises that had been made to her by folks like Yeager versus how that all played out and that sense of betrayal she felt when she realized Kaz was a spy and there was stuff just going on right under her nose. Like, I felt that. and I don't agree with her decision. There's like this very, very poignant scene at the end of last season where she visually makes the decision to go with the First Order. But it's just really, really great storytelling.
Yeah, I view it as, hey, I'm upset I can't get a job, so I'll join the neo-Nazis and march in khakis. You know, it's like, dude, why are you picking up the tiki torch? Like, this doesn't, or Kylo Ren, hey, my uncle had a lightsaber. Instead of talking to him about it, I decided to kill students and join the space neo-Nazis. That, it's like, causality is bad on that front.
Like, maybe that's how they do their recruiting, like, only people that are good for the First Order are susceptible to that, you know, the super dramatic, kind of messy people that are just like, you know what, this is a good idea, instead of doing rational things like talking it out or considering or taking a moment. They just need those super dramatic, instant results, instantaneous people to kind of survive in such a toxic environment.
Are you ruthless or emotionally compromised? The First Order wants you.
Yeah, and I mean, I think of, are either of you familiar with The Wave, which was at Cubberly High School in the San Francisco Bay Area in the late 70s?
No.
Okay,
no.
So it was as the story goes, it was the hippie social studies teacher, and you know, talking about the rise of the Third Reich, and the students going like, well, that would never happen again. And to prove his point, he decides, okay, I'll make the Fourth Reich at this high school. And they called it The Wave. And all the kids who were like the social outcasts who didn't play well with others rose to leadership positions. Yep. And everyone who was like the free thinking student government types were the ones ostracized. Yep. And so they were wearing, those who like do the high school reunions, something like, I could be wrong with this, but it was something like 70% of the students joined The Wave, like some ungodly huge number. But at the reunions, it's 70% denying that they joined The Wave. So, sure, it's difference between leadership roles, but a lot of people went along with it. And it's like, I don't know, just from like that model, from like history, because like the Nazis were successful, gangs are successful at recruiting people, and they all basically organize thugs with how they do it, but they know who they want to prey upon. Tam falls into that model, and it doesn't quite fit all of the historical models that I know of. And it's been a while since I dug into history books and on all this, but it's very easy to get people to do horrible things.
Well, that's why I think Agent Tierney, her character is so fantastic, and she really comes in at the end of season one, but she's sort of the polar opposite of the muscle, threatening intimidation tactics of, say, Commander Pyre or Captain Phasma. She's this thinking soldier, right? This person that's going to thoroughly manipulate you into the decision, into making the decision on your own that she wants you to make. It's almost like sort of spycraft-esque, except she's out in the open, plainly wearing a uniform. And the sort of next topic that we had on the outline here was talking about that transition, because you see Tam go from the citizen or just galactic citizen, inhabitant of the Colossus, whatever you want to call her, to an actual member of the First Order here. Certainly last season she boarded their ship and went along with the First Order, but this was a seminal moment. She's now a cadet, and at least if you apply the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the military's body of law, that's a real important distinction, because the transition from civilian to soldier is a really, really critical one. And an interesting twist here is that they don't make her a pilot outright. Like, she's not just TIE pilot XYZ, right? She's a cadet. It's clear that they're going to train her and whatnot. And that's no different than the real world military, right? you've got to go through some level of training before you're cut loose and you actually serve. For officers, there's a difference in terms of the pathway that you take in terms of whether the UCMJ actually applies to you. So in other words, while you're a cadet, say in ROTC or at West Point, whether you can break the law and simultaneously break the UCMJ and say potentially stand to face a court-martial or some other form of military discipline. I would argue that the first order, based on everything we've seen, is more like how West Point operates. Once you join the Corps of Cadets there, you are subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. In other words, if you commit a crime to include a military-specific crime, say like going AWOL, not coming back from the weekend or something, you could be charged and face a court-martial potentially for that conduct. And I think Cam faces the exact same situation here. I don't think the First Order views their cadets more loosely like ROTC programs and whatnot treat the college students that are taking those classes. So I don't think she realizes that. And you know, we haven't seen, I'm still waiting for the First Order legal thriller to be written, but that's my guess, is that she's now maybe unwittingly opened this door to some potential legal peril.
You can always do your own fan fiction. So there's a...
That's true. Del Rey, are you listening? I know two people potentially that I'm talking to right now that might at least read one chapter from it. We could sell a 3-page comic.
That's the new site, is fan fiction for lawyers. And
yeah, that's right.
Lawyers rewrite and update and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. All of the classics.
Yes, there's a lot there. There's so much there. So Thomas, we don't see her take an oath to join the First Order. And I mean, like, it could have happened off camera because you don't have to put everything on camera. But what would she be pledging allegiance to? Because this is, it's not a government. I mean, like, I've taken that position. And even though there's been some brilliant commentary by one of our followers who did an amazing write-up about how the First Order is a successor in interest to the Empire, I still think it's a bunch of white nationalists running around. Like, that's my view of them. It's you know, people, you know, would be like former Nazis in Argentina missing the good old days, and they have a submarine left over, and by golly, they're upset.
They're coming back. They're coming back.
Yeah, they yes, they are.
I just imagine this, like, one angsty Argentine teenager just, like, hearing the story of, you know, his grandfather that was a Nazi and being, like, so desperate to restart it, and that being your kind of real-life Kylo Ren character. Yeah.
Yeah, that's hauntingly accurate. happy place. Like, what do you think that would look like? I mean, like, did she sign anything? Like, how... Or is it like, oh, well, you know, she wants to fly a TIE fighter, so let's just groom her and put her in.
I think it's safe to say the First Order is not quite chill enough to let you just, like, join and, you know, they have an exchange where Tierney's like, you cool? Okay, here's your TIE. Go get him, Tiger. But I do think there's a list of things that had to happen off screen. One, she had to ball her hands into fists. Two, she had to be wearing all black to say this oath, or some shade of red. Three, she had to scream it, whatever it is. And four, there had to be a gigantic, like, abnormally large First Order flag draped behind her.
Yeah.
And all the surface that she's standing on is, like, mirrored black, and some poor, like, young stormtrooper had to, like, buff that all day to get it to shine like that, with threat of execution hanging over his head. That's the scene that I pictured that she had to do. It's probably, like, a little too intense for resistance, but it's a good question, because while the concept of an oath might seem, like, really formalistic, it actually matters in in real life, right? So you, if for those that are out there and are veterans, like, this is very familiar to you, but for most folks, it's kind of a foreign concept. There's a combo of both a contract that you sign and the oath that you take. And really, in terms of my own experience as a JAG officer, in our own training, you're not on the hook until you take that oath, right? So both parts have to be done. And it seems like a weird thing, I mean, but it's not this like blood ritual where everybody's in a dark room chanting and waving smoke everywhere. But it's a symbolic, significant event that is required. So you can theoretically walk away at any point before that. So I have to believe that the First Order has something like that. I mean, if they're raising an entire stormtrooper army from birth and, you know, brain wiping them as we saw last season, I think she's got to pledge her loyalty to something, probably to the Supreme Leader, I would think. I wonder whether they specify who that is in the event that the Supreme Leader, I don't know, gets like chopped in half by a lightsaber. Not that that would ever happen to Snoke, but.
Yeah, it's, again, contingency planning for continuation of government.
You've always got to be careful. You never know what would happen.
Boy, howdy.
But I mean, as she does, what we do see on screen is she does seem to do some measure of kind of denouncing allegiances and, swearing her allegiance to the First Order. So there is that. I mean, that, you know, like you said, it's probably some more dramatic version of that. A la, you know, I'm thinking Daenerys season finale of Game of Thrones with a giant flag that just came out of nowhere. But, you know, there is that sort of, you have to commit and definitely giving up allegiances to the, although I don't know why she just seems to be cool with her saying, yeah, no, I'm not into the resistance anymore. Like, they're dead to me, basically. So I don't know why you would take somebody at face value at that, but like we said, maybe there's some other dramatic swearing ceremony.
Yeah. Well, that makes it all the more dangerous when she goes back to her room and she's still carrying this comm, this intercom that's got a connection. Because quite frankly, if you're Captain Phasma as an honorable upstanding officer, I don't care that you just had this on your personal effects. I care that you have this encrypted comm link and you clearly received a transmission from a known enemy and a spy at that. Mm-hmm. And in terms of her legal peril, I think that connection, if she doesn't get rid of that comm immediately, which I don't think is going to happen because that's the connectivity there. That's going to put her at great physical and legal peril because of all the crimes that exist militarily. Spying is obviously one of the worst, but aiding and abetting the enemy is right up there. And so she's got some serious thinking to do in terms of her straightening out her personal effects.
She clearly needs to up her, you know, destruction of property game from Kylo Ren, because she just like tosses it on the bed. And I was like, you can do so much better than that. You can, you know, if you really want to stick it to them, there's a lot more you can do with that little comm drive, like stamping it to pieces.
Yeah, I mean, and she's got it, like, when she takes the call, she's got it loud as hell on speaker in her barracks room. I would be like, no, shut up. The moment I heard Kaz's voice, I would be trying to shove that thing down a trash compactor. But, she's more willing to accept risk than I am, I suppose.
That and the idea for the induction questions of like, hey, are you cool with killing your friends? Yeah. Really?
That's, if it gets me into a TIE fighter, yes.
That's
Priorities.
Scary answer.
Friends? Flying a TIE fighter.
I mean, sure, it makes that loud screaming noise in space. That doesn't make sense, but sure, let's go for it. Let's settle up. I really want to wear all black.
On that point, though, the most visceral scene and probably my favorite scene so far in any Resistance episode is right at the end as Tam pulls the helmet out looks at it. She's clearly wrestling with it and puts it on and just stares into the camera. That was like, that sent chills down my spine.
Yes, highly effective. And the brilliant visual storytelling still makes me wonder a bunch of questions, but that's why we watch the show every week. So, you know, while we kind of end on this point of, is, you know, we have the Resistance and the First Order getting ready to, well, one slug it out and the other get whooped severely. Are either government actors? Like, that's the, you know, like, how do we classify each? Like, so we have a continuity of government issue for the New Republic. You know, I still see the First Order as terrorists. Mm-hmm. There are people who saw Resistance as either terrorists or a militia that was kind of rogue from the rest of the New Republic. Do you, either of you have thoughts on that?
Gabby, I'll defer to you.
I'm trying to think, because like the thing that immediately pops into my mind, and in this episode, you know, they make a point to refer to General Organa. I mean, do you have some sort of monocratic, you know, government kick in when the New Republic is destroyed? If we're considering that they're destroyed, you know, there was no continuity of government, you know, they're completely like blipped out of existence for, you know, and history. Does the chain kind of refer back to the kind of older monocratic governments? And would that mean that with her royal title, does General Organa somehow have this kind of leadership and legitimate leadership role as opposed to the First Order, which they're just calling themselves, you know, leaders of, you know, the small group? So, I mean, that again could get you back into kind of historical context of, you know, bloodlines versus naming yourself king or, you know, calling yourself king or leader. But yeah, that's my gut instinct, is that they do, the Resistance and whatever's left of the New Republic under General Organa has some sort of legitimacy, probably more legitimacy than the First Order does, given that she does have that kind of older monocratic kind of ruling authority in her.
Yeah, I really like that point. The Bloodline novel that Josh mentioned earlier is just one of the best that's been written of all the books since Disney took over the franchise. And it kind of delves into the political machinations of the New Republic right before The Force Awakens. I look at the First Order as sort of a dark, dark parallel to the rebellion as they toppled the Empire. Because other than the moral authority to take the vacuum of government over after the Galactic Empire was toppled, what authority did the rebellion have? I mean, obviously they're taking the moral high ground and representing worlds that have been devastated and wronged by the Galactic Empire. At its core, at its top is a former senator joined by some former senators, but these are all people that left their posts that either voluntarily resigned or rightly or wrongly, the emperor made the executive decision to dissolve the Galactic Senate. And as we learned, I'm trying to think what book that it had it in, but you find out that all those senators got sent to prison. after they didn't just get sent home, they had to go sit in a prison cell somewhere. But I look at the First Order like that, and I don't know that one of the most fascinating things about the transition from TLJ to Rise of Skywalker is going to be this year gap in between them and what the First Order has done, because they seem to have the desire to take over some leadership mantle in the galaxy. I mean, they talk broadly about restoring order and whatnot, but you don't see what that looks like. You've got two sort of religious zealots at the top end And the rest of it is just the military arm. There seems to be, in terms of some of the new characters that we've been previewed, a political element to the First Order. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if they really haven't done a whole lot to sort of take over that vacuum that the New Republic left. And to go back to the parallel point, I don't know who is there other than the resistance to stop them, because what's the average system gonna say to the First Order? Like, I know you have a lot of Star Destroyers, but I don't think you have the legal authority to rule me. I don't think that argument's gonna go very well. And so at the end of the day, and I look at a lot of Outer Rim systems or more rural systems that probably just don't care. As long as their needs are met and they're not being destroyed, they probably could care less what's happening in the core worlds. And if the revolving door of galactic leadership has turned again, 3 decades after the last newcomer came on board, I think a lot of people in the galaxy are going to just shrug. And that's sort of the dilemma that Leia and the scraps of the resistance that were left at the end of The Last Jedi faced, because it's a big galaxy out there, and you know, despair and the sort of fear that can be spread by the First Order can have a powerful dampening effect. So that's, I don't know what we'll get in that opening crawl, but I hope we get some peek into what the First Order has been doing.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, running a government's hard, and you can't just do that through fear. And I think in terms of, you know, if there was a decapitation strike on Washington, D.C., we're still 50 states and, you know, a couple territories that are functional. They're not just going to, like, lay down and take it. So, like, in those states have National Guards. Do we have militias on the different systems that could put up somewhat of a fight? Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's Mon Mothma did a big demilitarization, so I don't know like how much of that hit other planets. But if people completely laid down their arms thinking everything was going to be hunky-dory, that was a bad plan. You do need a defense force. So, yeah, there's a lot of interesting questions they could do. I still think, Stephen Kent and I have we actually talked about this at the Star Wars, the bar in LA when he was out here, was, the best way to recruit for the resistance or the rebellion is from the First Order. You know, you had all of those stormtroopers watch Luke one-up their supreme leader, and those were all like brainwashed kids who were kidnapped. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the folks that you want to recruit and get them to turn on the First Order. So, which is why I don't think Luke killed anyone. It blew up, you know, he didn't reverse the AT-AT blast or anything like that. He pumped them. I would love to see, radio-free, stormtrooper messages coming out from Finn, things that could tear the First Order apart from itself. Because I do see it as a political movement. I don't know how much they're into governance. Yeah. And what that means for what we'll see in the Rise of Skywalker or any other secondary material that could come out.
It could be a situation, one of two things I think in my mind is likely with the First Order and governance. One, they've achieved nothing because Kylo Ren, nothing in terms of takeover, because Kylo Ren at the end of The Last Jedi is so desperate and hell-bent on, his vendetta against Luke and destroying the Jedi that has just consumed the First Order, this hunt to try to snuff out the resistance and his perceived enemies. And they've accomplished nothing that they set out to do. Or if you've watched The Handmaid's Tale, in that series, you've got this, the U.S. has collapsed partially or largely, and you've got this ultra right wing, very, very religious group that has established a new country, sort of in the on the East Coast, basically, in sort of an enclave, and they've got their own rules and their own pseudo borders, and they're fighting for to establish sovereignty. And I could see something like that, where the First Order has carved out a chunk of the galaxy, and that's First Order space. And they're slowly starting to build out as they snuff out any kind of resistance. But, you know, we'll see. I don't know. I like the idea that Kylo Ren has, like, completely thrown things off the rails and it's just, like, a wandering sledgehammer around the galaxy for a whole year.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't expect much. I think it would be definitely kind of controverting the continuity of his character to just be like, oh yeah, he turned into this fabulous kind of having it all together political leader, and he just like totally dominated with the First Order and just kind of put his obsession with Rey and Luke and, you know, destroying the Jedi to the wayside and just became like this amazing leader. Yeah, if that's in the title crawl, I may just like walk out and just be like, nope, not buying it.
Grandfather, I'm a legislator. Yeah. Are you proud of me?
I am the best damn admin guy you have ever seen. Yeah, I don't. It's like, be like Herbert Hoover and, you know, just being able to understand how government works, or Lyndon Baines Johnson, just like, just getting it. No, I don't see that happening. You know, Grant, that would be one hell of a curveball if they did that. You know, the trains are running on time, garbage is picked up every Tuesday, like they just...
Kylo Ren is like in a decked out black, all black office meeting with galactic constituents, like, I'm very sad that the trash service on your world out there in the Outer Rim is not what it should be, and we will work diligently to fix that. Thank you for bringing this to my attention. Thank you, Supreme Leader.
Yeah, if they don't have a Force ghost, if that is true, and they don't have a Force ghost of Han being like, this is bullshit. Like, this is not my
kid. I die for this.
I die for this bullshit.
I'm haunting all of this.
You know Harrison Ford would come back for free to do that. For free.
He would crash an airplane into the soundstage. I'm back.
And he'd do it like as Harrison Ford.
I heard the whining. I came as fast as I could. Oh Lordy. Time will tell. Time will tell. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the timing of Resistance, because like we're still, I don't know if they've blown up Starkiller Base yet. You know, because like that could all be, you know, the timing of this is all happening concurrently. So they could, you know, Phasma could have been speaking at the beginning prior, you know, from Starkiller Base before she got thrown down a trash compactor. So the, again, very interesting timing. So,
yeah. I mean, honestly, Broom Boy at the end of TLJ could be our new galactic leader. So who knows?
I'm down with that.
He seems solid.
It democratized Star Wars, and I was fine with that. I thought that was one of the best scenes of The Last Jedi. But anywho, want to thank you both. I know we'll be talking more. I know we have Clone Wars to get into. This is October, so we have classic monsters to talk about as well. So it'll be a fun month, and appreciate both of you tuning in. There will be a lot more to discuss. Everyone, if you haven't checked it out yet, the anthology book that I contributed to, Unlock Stories, is available on Apple Books and Amazon Books and Kindle. So check that out. Thomas is actually going to be at Nerd Night LA at the end of October. Was that October 26th?
I will not be flying to the West Coast, as much as I would like to see you, Josh. I will be driving a short distance to New York City. on October 26th, which is a Saturday night. You can go to Nerd Night New York City's or NYC's website, and they've got all the details there. It'll be in Manhattan.
Fantastic.
One more plug, and I'm one more Nerd Night plug. I will be in D.C. doing Nerd Night D.C. on Saturday, November 9th. And as with Nerd Night New York City, you can find there all the details for that one on Nerd Night D.C.'s website. So I will be patrolling the East Coast for the next 2 months.
As you should. So, yes, we've divided up the country into spheres of influence. So it's being able to discuss Star Wars and the law to is everyone who wants to hear it. So, Gabby, what's your Twitter and your website where people can see your work and your legal practice?
Yeah, so my Twitter is a jumble of political and nerd and just random thoughts that pop into my head, is Gabby the Esquire, which I am so proud that I was able to kind of secure that handle. It's also Gabby the Esquire at Instagram, and Olimar Law, O-L-I-M-A-R, law, .com, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Tumblr even. So go check it out. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, everyone, thank you for tuning in. And stay geeky. Stay geeky, America.